Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
And I'm broadcasting live from the Big Apple itself, New York City. And interestingly enough, the topic we're going to be talking about is apples are square. Yes, believe it or not, they really can be square. You're able to do anything with a computer today. But what we're really going to be talking about are six critical values that are changing the way many people are choosing to lead and to be successful. My guests today will be Susan Smith Kuzmartsky and Thomas D. Kuzmartsky. They are a team, obviously, and I hope I didn't massacre your last name.
Kuzmartsky is just great. Sounds perfect. Thanks.
Fabulous, fabulous. Well, I know that both of you are in Chicago, I believe, right now.
We are.
So isn't innovation wonderful because we can communicate regardless of the distance? I want my authors to know a little bit about you, Susan. You've been involved in training and teaching people about leadership skills. Well, actually, people of all ages, everything from youth groups to working with people at the United Nations. And Tom, you have been dealing with teaching people innovation, which is a challenge in and of itself. You've been involved with that for 27 years plus at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. You have, as a team, put together a number of books. You have done speaking. You really like working together. How did Apples Are Square birth?
Well, it took a while, as most births do. We spent about 5 years working on this, and we initially interviewed about 100 individuals on leadership and the meaning of success, and then we talked in depth with about 25 who we felt were different. They were sort of the new breed of leaders. And this group of 25, they cut across media, the arts, government, sports, education, and business. And from those interviews, we framed what we like to call the new archetype. It's six qualities that, or six values that describe a new leadership and a new way of looking at success.
Why did you choose apples as your image? I've got to find out about that one. Apples are square. Where did that come from?
That's a great question, and I love telling this story. One of the 25 leaders that we thought was really, really very unique was a guy by the name of Chris Zorich. And Chris Zorich used to be a football player. He played for the Chicago Bears and the NFL and was a star at Notre Dame football. His mom raised him in Cabrini Green, which is a poverty area within Chicago, on food stamps and on welfare. And his mom used to go late at night with Chris to garbage bins, take old apples out of the garbage bin, cut them off so that they got rid of all the brown spots, and she would hand it to Chris. And while he was growing up, he thought that apples were square. He never knew that apples were actually round. And we thought that that was such a great story because Chris left his football career at the age of 34 and started the Zorich Foundation for the Homeless. And he has tried to embrace his mother's values in everything that he has done. And we said, isn't that a great story to be able to say at the core, at the heart of organizations today, it's really good. But there's been a lot over the last 10 or 15 years that has ended up being bruised and brown, and we need to square off those apples and get organizations back to its core values.
I agree with that. One of the big components of success for many, many people is, gee whiz, I want the big bucks. People will talk about the Buffetts, the Gates, and they're really a very, very small percentage. You make a comment in your book about it's not about making money, it's about figuring out how to best make a positive impact. Now, there's nothing wrong with money because between Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, they have already donated over $70 billion in assets, dollars themselves, to go into different programs to help people. And those are wonderful things to do. But when we're talking about people in business, not everybody's going to be a Buffett. They have always been in more of a minority. Things are pretty much distributed over a very, very wide spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Susan and or Tom, whichever would like to address this, what do you think is at the core of the greed and the mismanagement that has been demonstrated by large corporations in the past, let's say the past 5 to 7 years?
Mm-hmm. I think it's two things. I really think the first is fear, and I think the second is a lack of understanding that ultimately true happiness comes from cultivating the self. And so the greed factor and the need for more and more, I think, has really stemmed from a fear of rejection, a fear of whether or not I'll be able to be secure and get to the next level. And so therefore, I've got to accumulate more and more and more. Matched with the whole aspect that people need to understand more that developing and cultivating the self is actually the key to happiness, as opposed to external factors. And I don't think that's anything that the media or the press really focus on. So people's benchmarks, right? Their frames of reference in business in particular becomes those external factors as opposed to internal pride, accomplishment, and sense of achievement.
Let me chime in here just a little bit, Donna.
Sure.
The old yardstick of success is monetary gain. It's win, it's get to the top, it's control the situation, even restrain your emotions, aggressively compete, compare assets, all of those things. And we talk in our book about a new yardstick of success, and it's these six qualities. It's the six-sided apple, but it's sharing leadership. It's relinquishing control. It's collaborating, serving others, motivating teams, inspiring individuals, and fortifying organizations so they can really accomplish great things. So it's a very different definition of success.
But the bottom line, of course, is that if those things are inculcated within a culture of an organization, the profits and the dollars will grow.
You bring out some unique points in your book, and I found to my surprise when I was going through it, one of the first points that you talk about is humility. Now, in the minds of many individuals, when they hear that word, they feel like that represents a groveling. It means that you are going to sort of get down on your knees, be down on the ground of life, and you just sort of crawl along. That's not your definition of humility. What is humility, and why is it so important in leadership?
We define humility as allowing an individual to let their ego go and to care more about the relationship than their power base. It means that you don't have to have the answer, that you can step aside to let others step in front. And it's actually one of my favorite leadership qualities. And we use the example in the book of one of our interviewees, Mary Ellen Weber, and she is an astronaut. She actually went up twice on the space shuttle. And she shared a story with us, which she still can't quite believe to this day, but her shuttle commander stood in front of the whole crew. This is on her second journey up, and he shared a mistake that he'd made. And they were in shock, because this usually doesn't happen in the no-mistakes-tolerated culture of NASA. But what happened when he did this is that the crew, it taught the crew that if they made a mistake, that they needed to speak up, that they shouldn't be afraid to ask for help. It produced less stress and more trust aboard the space shuttle, and the respect grew for everyone. So it was a wonderful story that I think conveyed a strong sense of humility on the part of commander, and it had a very positive impact throughout the whole journey around the around the globe, around the earth.
And the other part of that, Donna, is when you really know that someone is humble and respectful and that they care about you in an organization, you respond and behave differently back to that person. And so, therefore, you're less guarded, you're more trusting, you're more secure, and then as a performing employee, you're more motivated and productive.
Some very good points there. You have a very fine story by Deepak Jain that says there's an analogy that he likes to use involving fruit. The riper the fruit gets on the tree, it starts bending down towards the earth. As you go up and work in life, you need to become more humble and more down to earth. You need to point more towards the earth than towards the sky, mm-hmm. because the earth is what grounds us, provides stability, and because of gravity keeps us upright. And so that was an example of humility. Compassion. I mean, these are things that when it comes to leadership, this isn't something that typically is going to be looked at. Why in the world would you look at compassion? And this is the second side of the six sides of your squared apple. And Carl Jung says, your vision will become clear only when you look into your heart. Who looks outside dreams, who looks within awakens. Tell us about Randy Larimore.
Oh, that's a great, he was a great CEO. He used to be the CEO of United Stationers, which was a very large, very large company. And I guess one of the stories that I love best that he shares is the story of a young boy walking along a beach throwing starfish into the sea. And a man comes along and says to him, what are you doing? And the boy says, well, I'm saving all the starfish in the sea. And the man says, well, you can't do that because there's millions and millions of starfish. And so he, thinks that he's providing the boy with some reality check that he really can't make a difference. And explains that to the boy. The boy says, okay. He walks away, turns back around again, and sees the young boy throw another starfish into the sea. The man goes back over to him, and he says, but I thought I explained to you that you really can't make a difference. And the little boy said, but I sure made a difference in that starfish's life. And that's Randy's whole theme, is that you have to be compassionate to people on an individualized basis. And while he's a strong believer of teams also, his viewpoint is that it's the individual and the relationship and the rapport and the trust that you build on an individual basis is what ultimately creates a culture and an environment where people can thrive, and most importantly, where their own individual value is perceived and seen.
You have another side of the six-sided apple for leadership, and that's transparency. And I really enjoyed the story about Charles Lewis, and I just want to read a little bit of this here, because he's a man that I thought more and more individuals would want to know more about him. Because when he was coming up through junior high school, there was a counselor in school that told him not to bother going to college because he wasn't a very good student.
Right.
He was told by the University of Delaware that he would likely flunk out in the first semester. But he had something inside of him where he said, forget you guys. He graduated with honors and distinction, received a master's degree from Johns Hopkins University. And in 1998, he won the prestigious John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation Fellowship. And his mother sent the announcement to his junior high school guidance counselor, which I loved. I thought
that
good
great?
Justice served. I just love it. But there is a quote that you give from him. And this relates to the transparency, and I think it's quite powerful. If given the truth, people can meet any crisis, but deception and manipulation are so thick these days, probably thicker than we've ever seen them, very possibly in history. I am a strong believer in transparency, and I think that that is something, it angers me when, and man, that may sound a little, dramatic, but I really mean it. It angers me when people feel that the average person is stupid, that they cannot make evaluations. I mean, it has been, people have the capacity to evaluate. And if you
Absolutely.
Are honest and you are out there, they will rally behind you, help you, maybe give you a good swift kick in your financial tush if you need it,
mm-hmm.
but whatever it takes. Why is that so hard for a leader to do? It is so invaluable. And this goes full circle, Susan, with what you mentioned earlier, being willing to talk about things and saying, I screwed up.
Yeah. Charles Lewis is the founder of the Center for Public Integrity and just a wonderful human being. In terms of what we mean by transparency, it is puzzling that it isn't more prevalent, but it basically is quite simple. It means openness, it means integrity, and it means sharing information. And there are real benefits to that. In fact, in each chapter, when we talk about one of the six qualities or values, we describe it, and then we talk about what it looks like, and then we talk about the benefits of it, of each quality. But the benefits of transparency, of this trust, is our candidness. You can find it easy to have honest relationships because people know where they stand and how they feel. So you don't have hidden agendas, and you can solve problems because you can get to the truth. So it's essential, it's very basic, and it's extremely puzzling to us why it's hard to find.
And this is in every culture on the planet.
Yes.
And it is a challenge. Now, I'm not saying all leaders are that way, but your book, with these different factors and different points, really, I think, gives someone ammunition to work with, to empower them in their positioning, whatever it may be, whether they are someone that is the leader or someone that is of a supportive positioning in leadership, because there's no such thing as an insignificant job within any business, within any environment. And when you can respect and appreciate that, then you're already in a winning position. Let's talk about inclusiveness, because that falls right into what I just mentioned. How do you define inclusiveness? What does that mean to you?
To us, it means being recognized and accepted as part of the whole team and being a member of that community. And that, along with that, means you have to be very open and respectful of differences. And act upon the needs of others. So you others have to feel included, and then you receive their contributions, and the organization can move forward. The individual that we interviewed in the chapter in inclusiveness is Craig Newmark, and he's, as you know, the founder and chairman and the customer service rep of Craigslist, and he spends his day caring for his community. And what he means by that is he tries to get rid of all of the hackers and scammers, he calls them, who spoil his community. And so that's what he does. He's the customer service representative. And he's a fascinating individual. But I love his example, because he really does try to include everyone and protect his community. It's a community of 5 billion page viewers a month, which is phenomenal. And he only has 23 employees. So he extends this virtual inclusiveness to all. And it's just a remarkable, quite young individual.
Well, one of the things that I found so amazing about him is that he knows what his strengths are. And he has hired people to do those things mm-hmm. that he's not good at doing.
Mm-hmm. That's very true, very true.
And he said, this is what I'm very good at. I want to do this part of the business because this is where I excel, which is true. And then he found other individuals that filled the niches that he was not competent in, and he lets them do their work.
Isn't that great?
I think that's fabulous.
And see, the other part of that too, Donna, is that his belief in inclusiveness continues to pervade his own, business and personal decision making. So, as he states, as we mentioned in the book, he often reaches decisions by consulting his community of users.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of the ultimate in inclusiveness, when you go beyond the boundaries of your own employees and your organization to actually go on the outside to include your customers and your consumers in that mindset.
Absolutely, and that goes right along with another point of the apple or another side of the square apple, and that is collaboration. And you have stated it very, very succinctly. When you are open to customers, when you are open to your employees, when there are questions asked, somebody somewhere is going to come up with an answer or information that may or may not answer. But if you've got an openness and you're looking for a solution, that at least affords the opportunity for it to be presented.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right.
Yeah, I love the value of collaboration because it's so essential, and we describe it as working together as partners, obviously, but it's solving problems, exchanging insights, and sharing knowledge, and it involves creating a interdependency, really, that's mutually beneficial. It's leveraging people's strengths, and it's recognizing how best to use them for the good of the organization. One of the people we interviewed, and I think she falls in that chapter, is Carol Burnick, and she's the chairman of the board at Alberta Culver. And she shared with us a very revealing collaborative message, I think, and it was something along the lines that she really didn't care about being one of Fortune's most powerful women, although she is. But she just really wanted to work with a great group of people in an organization that made a difference. And I think that's collaboration.
Yes, it is. Because when you have that kind of an attitude, you're not putting people outside yourself. You're not in an ivory tower type of an attitude or environment. You're saying, I have to be down on the ground level. I want to be able to know what the janitor is thinking, mm-hmm. and I want to find out if we're having problems or if there are issues or if there's someone who's ill. You know, sometimes things happen with employees, with families. There are things that go on, and you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You find out what's going on. And that brings me to value-based decisiveness. And there is a point in this chapter where it's very clearly stated, you don't try to rescue the world, but you really look at what is going to work best. And that's what a leader has to do. A leader has to have enough acumen to be able to take information and then put it into a context to evaluate it. Talk to us a little bit about value-based decision.
Well, you know, ultimately, a leader has to be able to make good decisions. And I guess what we saw with these 25 leaders was what made them different in their decision-making process was that they ended up using these other values and qualities that we've just been talking about in making those decisions. So by implementing collaboration, by really listening to other people, by understanding the value that comes from inclusiveness and from diversity, by being open with other people, it enables them to get an openness back. By being compassionate, provides the linkages between individuals so that their decision-making ended up being based on better information, more valuable information, and was made in a way that wasn't based on what are we doing for next quarterly earnings, but rather what are we doing this quarter, this month, this week, to further advance our customer or our consumer's needs in a way that's meaningful to our employees. And that's the power of it. You know, one of the things that I teach at Kellogg on innovation is that the strength and the power of creativity comes from diversity. By bringing together, you know, a wide variety and a different mix of people, whether it's senior-level people to people that work in the plant, whether it's people from marketing, whether it's people from manufacturing. And it's sparking that insight that really is what makes people more creative by bringing different folks together. So ultimately, leaders are making better decisions if they're based on a set of values than if they're based on a profit projection.
As we're closing out our conversation today, I want to mention one chapter you have here, Don't Take the Pleats Out. And when I saw that, I went immediately to a vision of a skirt with all kinds of pleats pleats and having at one time to iron a skirt with pleats. And I'm saying, don't take the pleats out. And I love the quote that you put right at the beginning of the chapter. It's by Deepak Chopra. Everything is possible if you want something, give something. When you make a choice, you change the future. Don't say no, go with the flow. When you make a wish or express a desire, you plant a seed. Life is a journey, enjoy every moment. You are here for a reason. Have fun discovering what it is.
But don't take your pleats out. And what we mean by that is that keep your creativity and keep your professional passion, those two things. Those are your pleats. That's what makes you unique. And I think it's the key challenge for leadership is to not take the pleats out, because individuals get working in a culture and their professional passion and their creativity aren't expressed. So and actually that phrase, don't take the pleats out, came from one of our interviewees. So it's sort of fun to incorporate that in. Keep your creative fire, is what it means.
Well, Susan and Thomas, you have put a book together here that gives some perspectives that for those that wish to become leaders, those that are leaders that want to become more thoughtfully informed about various perspectives. I think your stories, your interviews are very valuable. And for those of you listening, we've been talking with Susan Smith Kuzmarski and Thomas D. Kuzmarski. We're talking about the six critical values that are changing the way we lead and succeed. And if you're someone, if you're thinking of going into business, it's a book for you to have in your library. Books, to me, are like buddies. They're like friends. And they're meant to be read more than once. I'd like to ask you, too, is there a website people can go to for information?
There sure is. It's the title of the book, Apples Are Square, Apples, A-R-E, Square. And that should .com, and that will take you to a sort of a fun website. It's very creative, and we hope your listeners will check it out.
Well, it has been so delightful having you as a guest. We are out of time. Again, applesaresquare.com, and I'm going to spell their last name. It's K-U-C, Z like zebra, M-A-R, S-K-I.
And Donna, thank you for being such a wonderfully informed interviewer.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Thank
I always read the book.
Our pleasure.
It has been delightful. This is Donna Sebo broadcasting live from New York City. We're going to be taking a break. Don't go away. We've got a lot of good things to share with you today. Again, applesaresquare.com. I know all of you listening are computer savvy, so go visit it. applesaresquare.com for information about leadership and six critical values that can make you successful and change the way you do business if that's what you want to do. We're going to be right back after this. Just don't go away.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hello, everyone. This is Donna Sebo. I'm broadcasting live from the Big Apple, New York City. And it is such a delight to be here. I have to share something with you. When I was coming in to New York City last night, and it was quite late. My flight had been delayed. I had to make a connecting flight to Chicago before I could be here. And we were held over for 6 hours because of a mechanical difficulty with a plane. So when I came in, it was quite late. And for those of you that have ever been to New York, you know it's a city that never, ever sleeps. It goes 24 hours a day. And when I was taking the shuttle into my hotel, there was this couple that was sitting in the seat in front of me in the shuttle. And the wife was saying to her husband, "Boy, it sure is dark. I wasn't expecting this. My goodness, there's hardly any lights." And as the shuttle came around Central Park is sort of dark, of course, at 11 o'clock at night. But her husband said, "Look ahead, look ahead." And she was noticing these high-rise buildings. Well, from the seat in the shuttle, she couldn't see very much. Then we turned the corner to come down towards Times Square, and this woman said, "I can't believe it. I've seen this on television, and here it is, Times Square." Of course, Times Square is the Las Vegas of Las Vegas in a sense. I mean, it's just incredibly gorgeous with all of these lights and these wonderful banners and sky-high motion picture screens with all kinds of information on it. And it was so much fun to watch this. This was the very first time. This was a couple in their 60s celebrating the wife's birthday. And she said, "I've always wanted to come to New York, and this was the New York I was expecting." It is an incredible experience. It was so much fun to watch them and see their response, because it is absolutely awesome. I mean, it really is incredible. So New York has a personality all its own, and I'm just absolutely delighted to be here. I'm here for the National Publicity Summit. I'm going to be interacting with about 100 authors here, and so you're going to be finding out about a lot of these people in my upcoming shows. By the way, if you want to call in and chat with me due to the wonders of technology here at bbsradio.com, no matter where we are in the country, in the world, you're going to be able to talk with me directly if you so desire. Here are the toll-free numbers in the U.S. It's 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, the toll-free number is 888-810-8322. That's 888-810-8322. And if you're a new listener to the Donna Sebo Show, I'm so delighted to have you join our listening family. And I want to let you know that should you miss any of the shows, you can always listen to the archives. And we've gotten some new technology that's going to empower us to get those archives up even sooner than what we were able to do before. Now, let me let you know about the guests that are going to be coming up next week. What a lineup we have. Of course, next week is Halloween. We're going to be talking about, on Monday, ghosts. Yes, and we're going to go to one of my favorite cities, which is Seattle, Washington, and we're going to be talking about some Seattle ghosts. Yes, so we're getting ready for that wonderful Halloween experience. Then we're going to be talking with Pete Siegel on Tuesday, how you can use your stress to fuel your success. Now, isn't that a winning title? I think we can all improve on using stress to fuel our success. And then, of course, on All Hallows' Eve, we're going to be talking about the story of the Halloween fairy and some other good things. So there's that that's coming up. And then next week, we've got a topic on Thursday that I think is going to be fascinating to many of you. It's Gary Ginsberg. He's done a lot of research on what's toxic and what's not. There's a lot of misinformation that is floating around, so we're going to get some of that cleared up. Also, if you are wanting to do a business plan, Garrett Sutton is going to be my guest next Friday. We're going to be discussing the ABCs of writing winning business plans. This man has a tremendous amount of experience and has put together a how-to book to make it easy for any of you. Meanwhile, if you would like to give me a buzz, the telephone numbers to call in to toll-free 877-876-5227 or 888 888-810-8322. Well, I have to tell you, a wonderful recipe for pumpkin pancakes was shared with me, and I'm going to share it with you. So get that pad of paper handy and your pen, and we're going to be talking about some good stuff, and boy, would it be a surprise for your family and maybe even your friends. And you know what? You could probably use it for waffles as well. It would be so pretty and colorful, and for this time of the year, it's a good thing. Donna Sebo here, broadcasting live from New York City. If you want to chat with me, 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-810-8322. I wanted to share some information with you about a Dr. Cosgrove. Now, this is an article that I came across in Newsweek, and it really was impressive to me. And, of course, always, because I have a daily talk show, I'm always reviewing material. I go through magazines. I go through books. I mean, I cover a tremendous amount of information. This is, I think, something you need to know. Now, Dr. Cosgrove started as a cardiothoracic surgeon in the 1970s. And when he started being a doctor, the doctor-patient relationship, he said, was really a one-way street. He said doctors knew it all. They were the ones that were up on the pedestal. The patients would come to you. You told them what they should do. And he said generally people followed what you had to say. However, he said it has changed quite a bit. He said in recent years, he found his patients were sophisticated consumers. They were doing their homework. They would come in to see him with their research and would have all kinds of detailed information about their conditions, the treatment options, and would talk to him. Now, I'm sure when this first started happening, he was rather stunned. And he said he didn't really realize how much people had changed until one day a patient complimented him on his choice of living room furniture. He said, I was stunned. He said, my home had won an architectural award, and the patient had come upon an article about the doctor's home while he was checking out the doctor online. Now, that is something that people do. However, on a typical day, these are some statistics, and again, this was in Newsweek. On a typical day, an estimated 8 million American adults seek health information online, where there are health-related websites, over 60,000 of them. Now, stop and think of that number. Because of the Internet, we have access to all of this information, and it's not been limited just to the Internet. Newspapers, magazines, newscasts are talking about different drugs, newly discovered genes, different surgical procedures, exercise regimens, and they're saying the amount of new medical information doubles about every 5 years. And because we have almost unlimited access to this massive amounting of data, people are starting to take control of their own health and their health care as never before. They're questioning doctors. They're saying, this isn't working. They want to work with their doctors, and now doctors are expecting their patients to become well-informed. People have formed support groups to share ideas and information about living with, you know, conditions like diabetes and different types of cancer. And people are talking about how they can work with different things. They're questioning. And now there's a clinic in Cleveland. They have a program at this clinic called My Chart. Patients are even given access via a password-protected website to their medical charts. They can get test results, renew prescriptions, and request second opinions, among other options. Now, this is a big shift, folks. a big shift because do you know how many have signed up for this? 110,000 plus, and more are signing up every month. Now, this is what they have found that has happened because of this wonderful program called My Chart. The diabetic patients who use this program do a better job of controlling their glucose levels, and people are taking on the responsibility of their own wellness. So it is something that makes a difference. And this is something you need to understand for yourself. You're going to be able to make requests. You're going to be able to question your doctors. And if you find a physician is absolutely upset that you have gone and investigated a late drug that's been put out, or you're reading about side effects and you want information, get yourself a different doctor. Because pedestals, sorry, they belong in the trash heap. And you know what? Doctors have a difficult enough schedule as it is. And if a doctor is really a good physician and doing what he loves to do, and that is to help people maintain their wellness, he is going to welcome the fact that you've done a lot of homework. He is not going to put you down for that, he or she. They're going to say, wow, this is great. Thank you for bringing this to my attention. Let me check it out. I have a very dear friend that I talked with before I left on my trip here to New York, and she was so excited. After being with a number of different physicians through the years that would not even willingly explore any options, she finally has a doctor that when she went in and was told by him, well, I think you may need a surgery or this, that, or the other, she said, well, you know, I can't take medications. I get serious reactions to them. I'd really prefer looking at other options. And he said, you know what? You know your body better than I do. If that's what you want to do, let's see what we can work out for you. She just about fell off the examining table. She was so excited. She said, I have finally found someone who's willing to listen to me. Don't give up, folks. There are a lot of sincere, really caring people in the medical industry that want wellness for you. They want you to be able to deal with your life in a rich way, in a more fulfilling way. You just sometimes have to keep asking questions until you find that special person. So I wanted to share that with you. This is Donna Seebald, broadcasting live from the Big Apple. Give me a call at 877-876-5227 or 888-810-8322 if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. I will be back in home office on Monday, but in the meantime, you can still chat with me live right here on bbsradio.com. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back right after this.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Seebald accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss, book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author, Donna Seebald, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Seebald's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Donna Seebald publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Remember I told you somebody had shared a pancake recipe with me? Pumpkin pancakes. Yes, healthy, and they're also going to be fun to serve because they're orange. Well, here you go. So get that pad of paper and pen. This makes about 12 pancakes, and that's enough, you know, for four people. Or maybe it's for one person. I don't know the size of your appetite. But here is how it goes. You need 1.5 cups of milk. 1.5 cups of milk. Now, let me say something here. You can use non-fat. You can use evaporated. You can use whatever milk, whole milk, whatever you want, because it's up to you, and it'll make a difference in the consistency of the pancake. So try it. If you're watching calories, go with the low-fat or the non-fat. Also, you're going to need 1 cup of pumpkin puree. Now, if you're one of these, what do I want to say, really particular people, you want yours absolutely fresh, then go ahead and microwave a fresh pumpkin until it's nice and soft, and then puree it in your Cuisinart or your blender so that you can have it for this recipe. Me, I go and I get a can at the grocery store. That's what I use. You take 1 cup of pumpkin puree, 1 cup. You're going to need an egg, and I recommend a jumbo egg, 1 egg. You're going to need 2 tablespoons each of oil and vinegar. 2 tablespoons each of oil and vinegar. You're going to need 2 cups of flour, 2 cups of flour, 3 tablespoons of brown sugar, 3 tablespoons of brown sugar, 2 teaspoons of baking powder, 2 teaspoons of baking powder, 1 teaspoon of baking soda, 1 teaspoon of baking soda, 1 teaspoon of ground allspice, 1 teaspoon of ground allspice, and 1 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, and 1/2 teaspoon of ground ginger, 1/2 teaspoon of ground ginger, and then 1/2 teaspoon of salt. Now, this is how simple it is. You mix together your milk, your puree, your egg, your oil, and your vinegar. In a separate bowl, you put in the flour, the brown sugar, your baking powder, your baking soda, your allspice, cinnamon, ginger, and salt. Now, whisk the dry ingredients together and then stir them into the liquid mixture of your pumpkin and milk, etc., just enough until it's all combined. You don't want to whip it or beat it. You just want to stir it in until it's all mixed. And then on a lightly oiled griddle or frying pan over medium-high heat, and you'll know when the pan or the griddle is ready because all you have to do is drop some water on it. And when those drops just do a little dance over the top, you know it's just right for putting that pancake batter on. And you can pour or scoop the batter onto the griddle. Use about 1/4 cup for each pancake. And you know what to do. You flip that pancake, and there you go, and serve it with real maple syrup. Now, I like to double the spices because the spices, for me, I like a stronger flavor. But this is a pumpkin pie of a different type, and what fun. Now, if you want to add healthy stuff into it, then add some flaxseed. Add some wheat germ. I mean, experiment. If you want to add some other good stuff into it, you can do that. But it's the flavors of the spices that give this pancake recipe that extra oomph. And, oh, what a fun thing for a Halloween breakfast or for any fall morning. It's just absolutely perfect, and they're orange, and what fun. It's just something that people won't expect. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-810-8322. That's 888-810-8322. All I need is your first name or your address, and then after that, I'll give you my impressions, and you're welcome to ask me about anything that you would like to ask me about. There is some information that I came across that I thought was fun. And since we just have so many different points of detail that we share, I thought I would share this with you because so many people are not aware about how hearing makes such a difference. Now, there is a diagram that I have in front of me of an ear canal from a long-extinct lemur. And your hearing has a lot to do with how you moved. Now, there is a gentleman, he's a Penn State paleontologist, Alan Walker, and they found a clue to how mammals' motion happen due to the way their ears work. And he said, there's three semicircular canals of the inner ear that have their own built-in gyroscope. And they play a role in balance. If any of you have ever had an earache, you know how miserable that can be. And how you can get dizzy? I've been there, done that. Well, these canals serve as sensors for the muscles of the eyes and the neck, and they enable us to have reflexes that keep images steady as we're moving. Now, stop and think about that. When you're playing basketball, when you're doing any kind of activity and you're moving, you just don't realize how that balance inside the inner part of the ear makes such a difference. And what occurs with these canals of the inner ear, they're angular accelerometers, he says, measuring spin. And if you move slowly, your sensitivity doesn't need to be as great as when you move acrobatically. Now, they examined the ear canal structures of more than 200 mammal species, and they found that those that were really fast and agile, like the gibbons and the leaping tarsiers, have exceptionally large canals in their ears for their size, while slow, easygoing animals like sloths have little tiny ones, very, very small ones. So they've established now the relationship between ear structure and movement in living animals. And they said they've been able, because of this information, to evaluate about how animals that are extinct, how they were able to move, whether they were fast-moving or slow-moving. And he said when you have a skeleton, you can use biomechanics and analogy to try to reconstruct locomotion. And he said with many animals, they don't leave footprints, can't tell whether you're right or not. But he said this is an independent way to assess agility and jerkiness of locomotion. Now, when you think about this, wouldn't this be wonderful to share with young kids when they're in school the value of science and research and mathematics and how they can have this wonderful world of discovery to learn about new things? This is something I think that we as adults need to appreciate, but we also need to pass it along to our kids so that when they're in school, they can get excited. They know that there's all of this wonderful, wonderful world that they can explore. There's so much to learn. And that is, I think, one of the greatest joys that we as adults, that we can pass along to the younger generation. So frequently I hear, in fact, I talked with a teacher on a flight, my flight here to New York, and she said in today's classes there's so many things we have to contend with that I don't think teachers of the past had to contend with. And she said perhaps it's because we're more aware of certain points of information than ever before. But she said there are so many brilliant children, and they are being missed. They are being passed over. They are not being encouraged to grow, to explore, to expand. They're being encouraged to adapt to mediocrity. She said it is so important that their curiosity be stimulated. And, you know, with us as adults, think of how boring life is when we're not willing to learn. Have you ever known someone that just shut off their life and said, I don't want to learn anything else, there's nothing more for me to do, I've done it all, that's it? Usually they're dead pretty soon after that. Don't be like that. Realize that you have something in front of you, your life, no matter what your age. I don't care if you're 17 or if you're 99.9. It doesn't make any difference. There is always something new out there to explore and to investigate. And you know, there's no day more special than today. And there's no one more precious than you, where you should celebrate every moment that it has to offer you. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo here, broadcasting from New York. On Monday, I'll be back in my home turf. Talk with you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Hi, Peggy Lee Quayler here. Thanks for listening to Songs from My Stories on